keep still. You're my thrill.
Could you kinda care? Could you learn to part your hair my way? How'd you like to love me on the level? How'd you like to miss me like the devil? Would you be so kind as to keep me on your mind all day? I told my doctor, my lawyer to see what they think. The and no other, how'd you like to drive in? Meet my mother, how'd you like your toothbrush hanging right alongside mine? How'd you like it? As for me, I'd like it fine. Your toothbrush hanging right alongside mine. How'd you like it? As for me, I'd like it fine. How'd you like it? As for you, you shouldn't mind. How'd you like it? As for me, I'd like it fine.
Star eyes, that to me is what your eyes are. Soft as stars in April skies are. Tell me someday you'll fulfill their promise of a thrill. Star eyes,
good, how are you?
Flashing eyes in which my hopes rise. Let me show you where my heart lies. Let me prove that it adores that loveliness of yours.
Okay. Welcome, everyone, to the Planning Commission meeting of Monday, December 10th, 2018. I'd like to call this meeting to order. We'll begin the meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. Will everyone please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Will the clerk call the roll, please?
Commissioner Lynn.
Present.
Commissioner Maynard.
Present.
Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Vice Chair Smith. Chair Fuller.
Here.
Thank you.
And now we come to the public forum. This is a time for any member of the public who wishes to speak on a subject other than what we are will be discussing tonight to address the Planning Commission. Is there anybody here who would like to address us? Okay, seeing no one coming forward. Staff, are there any amendments or adjustments to tonight's agenda?
Chair, we have no amendments or adjustments.
And now for our next agenda item, will the clerk please read the next item into the record?
Item A1 is the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of October 8th, 2018.
Is there any discussion on the minutes of October 8th, 2018? Is there a motion to approve?
I motion to approve the minutes.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries 5-0. Next.
4-0.
Huh? 4-0. Thank you. I stand corrected. Will the clerk please read the next item into the record?
Thank you. Item B1 is a public hearing. It's to consider case number 17-421 GPA for general plan amendment to transportation element figure 7-2, functional street classification and key intersections map and related transportation element policies.
So we'll follow the usual hearing procedures, starting with the staff presentation, followed by questions from the commissioners, and then followed by comments from the public. Then staff response, followed by more questions from the commissioners. Then we'll close the public hearing and allow commissioners to deliberate. Maybe we have the staff report.
Good evening, Chair and commissioners. Tonight's presentation will be provided by Jay Ritterbeck, Senior Planner in Advanced Planning. You can see in the audience there's also folks from the Public Works Department. Mm-hmm. Because there are partners in this transportation element general plan amendment. With that, I'll just turn it right over to Jay so he can get into the thick of the presentation.
Thank you, commissioners. The purpose of this evening's hearing would be to consider the previously city-initiated general plan amendment that was initiated by City Council last year. The update of the street classifications would change the figure that is presented in figure 7.2 of the transportation element to reflect the changes that are being proposed this evening. It would also update the policies themselves in transportation element 3, which discusses the streets and highway plan the standards and definitions of all these different classes of streets that we have throughout the city, as well as finally providing a recommendation on the general plan amendment, which will be taken to City Council along with a CEQA exemption. As far as the general plan, we adopted that in 2006. It has been amended 18 total times. We just had one a week ago with the fire station. Mm-hmm. And again, in 2017, the general plan initiation was made by the City Council. Mm-hmm. In order to address those changes that are being recommended tonight. As a background, the vehicle code, California Vehicle Code, has specific definitions for roadway classifications. Those are recorded in the California Roadway Systems records. The city many cities throughout the state rely on those classifications for various funding monies that are available depending upon that classification for road maintenance, et cetera. It also allows, depending on the classification, it allows a city to enforce a prima facie speed limit. Our general plan, figure 7.2, depicts those current classifications that we've had on the records for quite some time, and the sub-policies within transportation element have been static as well. So updating those through this general plan amendment would align the city's classifications with those that are currently within the CRS. And as an example, currently this is what is shown in the general plan in figure 7.2. What was presented to the city council was a request to analyze these roads and provide an application or a request to Caltrans to have these updated and reclassified from class 5 major collectors to class 7 local roadways. And the resulting map that is included in the staff report depicts those changes as they would be made and then recirculated to all city staff and updated on the website and provided to everybody that has a copy of the current general plan. A major change that you'll see is that the current classifications within the 7.2 figure are quite different than those that are on the CRS map classification. And changing that symbology to make them consistent is one of the major components that is being proposed so that our figure 2 matches more closely to the CRS map, which is 10-22, which is also included as an attachment to the staff report. Additionally, there is an attachment that includes a strikeout underlined version of the policy, the specific policy changes that are being recommended. And as part of the resolution, there's a clean version that is included. And those are primarily just updating the definitional categories or classifications. It does not change the actual physical makeup of the streets. The recommendation for the resolution that is included in the staff report includes the change to the map figure. It includes the changes to the text, as well as making the or adopting the CEQA exemption, which is provided also as or is provided as section 1561B3. That concludes staff's presentation. As mentioned earlier, members of the Public Works team are here. Marty specifically was instrumental in getting this initiated, as well as coordinating with planning staff to make sure that everything was crisp for you in the staff report and meets what they were requesting originally. That concludes staff's presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the commissioners? Commissioner Miller?
Would I be correct in saying that the primary purpose for this amendment is so that the city is able to enforce 25-mile-an-hour speed limits on certain streets that are not currently classified eligible for enforcing such speed limits according to the CRS map?
As a general, that is correct. Marty can add to that as well.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening, Chair Fuller and commissioners. The existing, we're kind of in a process state, and I want to try to help make that clear. The CRS map with the state, which was coordinated with SBCAG and the Santa Barbara County Association of Governments, Caltrans and the Santa Barbara County Association of Governments, has already been changed. And that map has the classifications on it that are, per the vehicle code, what we can do with regards to enforcement. It's not that you can't enforce a street with a higher classification. It's just more onerous to do so, not only in the posting, but as well as enforcement, certain rules and regulations about how you can enforce. So legally, we can do it either way. It just makes it simpler to take a local street that's a residential street that's defined by the vehicle code with regards to how many streets on, how many houses front the street and how many within a quarter mile. Makes prima facie the guiding and simple way of enforcing a speed limit on a street. So that part has already occurred. We're now coming back and adjusting our map to be consistent with the CRS map. So due to that, for that consistency's sake, it makes much more sense. And it doesn't negate or change the ability for the city to enforce within the city limits what's in accordance with the vehicle code. So I know it's a kind of convoluted, but that it is the way we have to go through the process.
Thank you.
Anybody else have? Yes.
Well, Marty's up. I might have a question for. Mm-hmm. So overall, this looks like a very reasonable proposal. I had one clarifying question since mm-hmm. this is all new to me. You've shown us the AADT values, which is I think the annual daily trips. And so I guess one of my questions is, to what extent is the AADT correlated with the type of road that it is? It seems like we're moving some from major collectors to local roads. Is there an AADT level we're supposed to be looking for if something's at a local versus a major collector?
Chair Fuller and Commissioner Maynard, there's a couple of different criteria mm-hmm. that can be evaluated mm-hmm. as a part of whether a street is a local street mm-hmm. or an arterial mm-hmm. can be based upon ADT, mm-hmm. but it also can be based upon the definitions in the vehicle code which do not include ADT. Mm-hmm. Any part of the transition mm-hmm. with the CRS map, mm-hmm. both Caltrans and SBCAG mm-hmm. does look at ADTs or the average mm-hmm. daily yeah. traffic on a street mm-hmm. to help facilitate that decision-making process. Mm-hmm. And as I'd indicated, we went through both mm-hmm. SBCAG and Caltrans and looked at all of those issues. So mm-hmm. in general, the answer is no. A street is not defined by its ADT, yeah. but it does help that decision-making process.
And what's usually the top ADT for a local road when that's considered?
My apologies. I honestly don't keep that information okay. in my head. Okay. I'm sorry.
Well, no, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Well, that's all my questions.
Okay. Anybody else? So I have a question. I didn't see anything in here, or if you correct me if I'm wrong, about how this affects funding and potential funding. I mean, that was one of the things they talked about, that, you know, we had these designations because of the funding mechanisms that existed at the time. Have those funding mechanisms changed, or how will they, will funding be affected? The possibilities of funding be affected by changing these classifications?
Chair Fuller, there were many years ago, a couple of decades ago, I think, there was funding available based on the designation of these streets. Those funding opportunities are no longer in place. Whether there would be future funding that would change and would go back to these classifications is a possibility.
With the gas tax and the increased level of state funds available for local roads, right? But is that going to include local, local roads?
Yeah, currently, there are no definitions in any of the funding that we get that limits whether we use it on an arterial or a collector or a local road. It okay. doesn't within those definitions. There's no requirement.
Thank you. Would have been nice to, have that explained also in the staff report. But that's fine. I just wanted to be clear on that. I have a general comment. It seems like some of the roads that we're downgrading from arterial roads or collector roads also show up in the new CIP as potential intersections for traffic signals. So on one hand, we're talking about downgrading roads to a lower level, and on the other hand, we're talking about, throwing up traffic signals to handle the traffic load. So somebody can comment on that in the CIP section or not. That's all right. Just an observation.
Can
So, yes.
So just on the funding thing, so I think from the staff report I understand, so the Federal Highway Administration funds would not be available once it becomes a local road, but FEMA funds are available, is that right?
Yeah. Yes, please.
And then I guess how much would we have been likely to get federal highway versus FEMA funds and things like that?
Chair Fuller, Commissioner Maynard, there were a couple things that I would want to add about funding. Mm-hmm. First of all, the roadways that are shown on the CRS map with these functional classifications, typically in an emergency situation, so say we had an earthquake or a flood or something and these roads were impacted, anything that's on the CRS map in color, the funding source that we would use to address the emergency situation, say damage to the roadway, would go to FHWA. Anything that's not shown in color on that map would go to FEMA. So there are some funding implications. It's not that we wouldn't get funding, but we need staff to be cognizant of where the funding is going to come from. So the color roads are FHWA, the non-color roads are FEMA.
And in a non...
It's my understanding there are still some FHWA funding programs, such as the Highway Bridge Program, that would require a roadway to be on system or one of the colored roadways. So there are a few legacy programs that are still out there. They're few and far between. They're falling off the out of the programs as FHWA tries to get out of the business of funding local roads, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But one of them is the Highway Bridge Program. We don't have any bridges on these roads, but if we did, that would be something we would have wanted to consider. I thought I had something else, but go ahead.
Okay, so in a non-emergency situation, how would this change our federal, the FHWA funding for us?
For FHWA, we don't really get day-to-day funding from them. Mm-hmm. So anything that's state, such as gas tax, mm-hmm. or local, such as Measure A funds, mm-hmm. we're free to use those on any of these roads, whether they're functionally classified as the colored roads on your map or not as local mm-hmm. roads. So we really have a broad range. We're very unrestricted when it comes to state and local funding. So it's really not a consideration.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. Any other questions from commissioners? So we'll open it up to public for a comment. Do we have any requests to speak or anybody here that wants to speak on this issue?
No, Chair Fuller, I have not received any.
Oh. Disappointing. any more questions from the commissioners? I'm going to close the public hearing. And anybody want to make comments for deliberation on this or make a motion?
Oh, I just want to say that I thought it was very clearly presented and understandable for a layman. And I noted the other streets on that capital improvement plan, too, and that was the only thing that struck me as being kind of inconsistent. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it makes sense. And I fully support it.
Yep, Commissioner Maynard.
All right, I'll go ahead and make a motion, okay. If that's okay. Let me pull it up in here. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to adopt resolution number 18, entitled the Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, recommending to the City Council approval of the general plan amendment to amend the city's transportation element, figure 7.2, functional street classification and key intersections map, and to amend related transportation element policies in policy TE3, streets and highways plans and standards, and to determine that the general plan amendment is exempt from CEQA, pursuant to CEQA section 15061B3, attachment 4.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, so that passes 4-0. Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you read into the next agenda item, please? Thank you.
Item B2 is a public hearing. It's the Development Impact Fee Ordinance, case number 18 127 ORD.
Mm-hmm. And staff? Report? Change of personnel. New faces. I don't think so.
Good evening, Chair, fellow members of the Commission. My name is Joel Camardi. I'm a consultant for the city, interim deputy public works director. My slide's not up. Okay, how do I do that? Good evening. I think I've said that already, so I won't go any further on that subject. So the purpose of tonight's item is for the Commission to consider a resolution to recommend approval of a new DIF ordinance for the city. And a little background, first of all. Let's see if it works this time. Yes. Now, development impact fees, or as they're referred to colloquially as DIF, is a very important funding mechanism for public facilities. The ordinance, which is what we're talking about tonight, establishes the type of fees, and a nexus study establishes the amount of the fee. Now, development fees are charged by way of the Mitigation Fee Act, which you may be familiar with. And today we are looking for a recommendation to approve a new DIF ordinance for the city of Goleta. Consideration of the nexus study, again, which determines the amount of the fees, will be considered by council in February of next year. So, as I mentioned at the beginning, this funding mechanism is important for public facilities, the expansion of existing public facilities. And what are public facilities? Well, you know all this, but I'll repeat it anyway. We have bike and pedestrian facilities, road and rail, park, recreation, public administration, which is this building here, and the community center, library, which is the actual land and building of the library, plus all the stuff in the library, books and videos and things like that, fire facilities, structures, firehouse, trucks. Then we have storm drain facilities, which is all the pipes on the ground that catch the water to drain the streets. And finally, police, any capital facilities related to the function of police. So that's what we're referring to as public facilities. A little history. The city has been functioning with a DIF program since incorporation, and it inherited the county's program. Since that time, the city has made a few minor changes, but today is the major big one, and with this ordinance before you, we will be representing a consolidation of all the DIF fees into a single ordinance, which will simplify lives a great deal, and along with the accompanying DIF nexus study, as I mentioned before. So why do we have the DIF? Well, when any development occurs in the city, whether it's residential or non-residential, it creates growth. Obviously, if it's a resident, that's new people living in the city, and therefore it generates new trips on the road, new people walking around the sidewalks, new people using the parks, and therefore that burden has to be addressed through an expansion of those existing public facilities. And the same occurs for business development, new offices, new supermarkets, etc. It brings in more people even though they don't live in the city. And that burden, again, has to be funded or expanded somehow, and the funding in part is through the development impact fees. So a development impact fee is not a gift or a favor that a developer is doing for the city. It's really a requirement in order for the city to be able to accommodate that growth. This next table is a simple chart just listing the existing fees that we have in operation right now. And then to the right is the fees that are included in our new ordinance. So there's a slight difference, some additions, some deletions. Go through the existing one first. We have transportation, public administration, police, library, fire, flood control, parks, and rec. On the new fees, we are actually splitting transportation into two. We have roads and rail, and then bike and ped is a separate fee. Public administration, we also have one, the new one, of course. The police item, we are not having it as a separate item. That's being subsumed into public administration. That's a new word I learned today, so I had to use it. Library, we also have that, of course, in the new one. Fire, the same. Flood control fee, that one is not being assumed in the new ordinance. That was, and the reason for that has never really been applied. And the reason for that is that the flood control systems in the city are really maintained entirely by the county flood control district, and there's no reason for the fee to be used by the city, or the city doesn't have the right to use the fee or to collect it. So that's being deleted. Parks and rec, same in both. And lastly, we are adding storm drain. So we have miles of storm drain pipes in the city, and so as a development expands, thus the expansion of the storm drain facilities also will be needed on occasions. So that will allow us to collect fee for that. A few more details. The fees are collected under each fee fund and expended on those public facilities for which they're collected. In other words, all the fees that you collect for bike and ped, they have to be spent on bike and ped projects, same for parks, et cetera, et cetera. The table here is in the ordinance. It's a table that represents the fee triggers. So for the two categories of development, residential or non-residential, we have two triggers, one only for road and rail facilities, and then all the other permit fees. So let's talk about the road and rail facilities. The trigger is the same for both residential and non-residential, and it's a peak hour trip generation or fraction thereof. In other words, the development generates a trip on the road, and it occurs during the busiest time of day, or the peak hour could be usually is in the PM peak or commuter, evening commute, can be in the morning. Actually, it could be midday as well, but generally it's in the evening. That's the trigger for the road and rail transportation facility fee. For all other fees, for residential, the trigger is the development of a single or permitting of a single dwelling unit. And for non-residential, it's the development of 500 or more square feet as part of the development. So the recommendation before you this evening is to adopt a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, recommending to the City Council approval of a new development impact fee ordinance. Assuming that occurs, the next steps would be that the council would consider adoption of this same resolution and approve the ordinance, and that would be scheduled in February of next year. The city would also at the same time consider approval of the DIF Nexus study in February of next year. And assuming that all occurs, the new impact fees would become effective within 60 days of approval by the council. That concludes my presentation. If you have any questions.
Yeah. Questions from the commissioners? Commissioner Maynard?
Thank you so much for your presentation tonight. I have a couple of quick questions. So my understanding is the impact fees can only cover facilities. Is that correct? Physical facilities?
That's correct. Capital facilities.
Okay. And then, so the bike fee, can that include things like lighting for bike and pedestrian paths or intersection lighting that might reduce pedestrian and bike accidents?
It can, so long as it can be characterized as an expansion of the existing facility or enhancement of that operation. So if it makes the the facility function better, then yes.
Okay. Wonderful. And then related to that, so the stormwater, was noticed that it was stormwater drain fee, which is a very sort of particular type of dealing with stormwater. I'm wondering if it might be better to call it a stormwater facilities fee or something that would allow us to have a little bit more flexibility as new technologies are available for stormwater management, and even some very old technologies like having bioswales by roads as an example to have a more ecological interaction there.
Commissioner Maynard, I think I'd like to answer that question in this way, that really there's three or more ways of looking at stormwater. There's flood control, so we look at the whole idea of flood control and the flood control facilities. And I guess this has to do with vocabulary and keeping our vocabulary correct as we deal with state agencies and all the things we do. So flood control, the next area is stormwater. Stormwater really, the way we look at it at the city and at the local agency level is this is how we're meeting the state requirements through the Regional Water Quality Control Board. That all goes all the way back to our NPDES permitting through the National Clean Water Act. So stormwater really has a defined meaning that really relates all the way to that national level of the Clean Water Act. And lastly, there's storm drains. And storm drains really are those physical facilities that are in the road, that primarily in the road, but they are a few other places that deal with runoff related to our other facilities, such as roadways. And we're looking in this particular instance about how development expands the needs for those storm drain systems to also expand. So we're looking at capacity increasing needs. So I would recommend we not really change that word to stormwater. I'd like to see it stay as a storm drain facilities, because what it really does is it helps us stay within that vocabulary of understanding that this fee really applies to capacity increasing projects for the storm drain system. So if you went back to those storm water things like adding BMPs, how we might look at say things we might do to retrofit our existing storm drain system, those really actually wouldn't count for this, because those aren't capacity increasing, and that's not something we can do under this program. So I'd like to see it stay where we keep those ideas intact, where we have flood control, we have stormwater and how we meet all those regulations, and lastly, we have a physical storm drain system that this is really talking about and applying the funding to.
I guess to build on that a little bit, a bioswale would increase capacity of the stormwater system, as it would help for to have more infiltration of stormwater directly back into the ecosystem, so it didn't have to overload the storm drains. So wouldn't that still meet the need and would still be an infrastructure project?
It could count, but then I'd still think about that term of it's really a storm drain system that we're improving. It's not really retrofitting a stormwater. It's not really addressing a stormwater regulation requirement. So I'm trying to maintain that vocabulary of thinking about flood control, stormwater regulations, and then our storm drain system. And you're right, certain BMPs like a bioswale might actually increase capacity at the same time. But again, that bioswale probably would have multiple functions. It wouldn't just be capacity increasing. It might also be water filtration. And so therefore, only a portion of that project would be eligible for this expense, only the capacity increasing portion of it. So if you were building a BMP, you'd have to somehow just figure out how to divide up the cost between a capacity increasing facility and a water filtration system. And we'd probably have to apply multiple funding systems.
So the let me help to understand this. I'm sorry, wade my way through this here.
Sure.
So if there's a co-benefit, you have to split the cost, even if the project fully helps to address capacity building.
I would be very careful about how we spend that money, and I would probably look at splitting the cost between what is considered water filtration and what is considered capacity increasing. So under the Mitigation Fee Act, we really have to stick with and be able to hang our hats on the idea that we were creating something that was capacity increasing. And if there were other components that had a cost for filtration, those costs would have to be borne somewhere else.
But if that factor that helped filtration also built capacity, you could do it. It's just as long as everything is capacity focused.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I suppose we could look at it at some BMPs that maybe would kill two birds with one stone, but I'd be very, very careful about that. We want to make sure we stay within our pots of money, our sources of money. And therefore, that's another reason why I'd like to keep the vocabulary the same, so that we're really identifying the sources of funding.
Thank you.
Sure.
Other questions? Commissioner Lynn?
Could you explain why the police facilities fee was melded with the public administration fee?
I cannot.
You know what? Actually, I'm gonna put Winnie on the spot and see if she can answer that question, because that was something before I got here. That was a decision made without me.
I'll try my best at trying to recall why we did this. I think it's because it's such a small amount of money that we collect for under the separate sheriff's fee that we currently have, that it made sense because we have a city hall that has sheriff facilities that our DIF consultant recommended to us, that it just made sense to consolidate it and not have a separate fund for it.
Blame the consultant.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Other questions? I just want to note that these fees are also being charged for reconstruction, and that seemed a little interesting to me that we're going to charge on reconstruction. However, I guess under credits, if there's the fact that a building might have been burned to the ground would end up being a credit that would then offset the development impact fee. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure the state thinks, we're being even-handed and equal, in this community, and not, just looking for every opportunity to rake in more fees. Next, maybe Ms. Director Ebling could read for me on page 14 of the proposed ordinance. And I want to say, I think it's a great idea putting all these ordinances, in the zoning ordinance, so they're easy for everybody to find and understand where they are and what they are, the fees, and they can just look up. But yeah, it would be page 27 of the total, 28 of the big report, staff report. And 14 of the actual regulation or ordinance. And then at the top, paragraph 3. Starting if and.
Would you like me to read it aloud?
Yes, please.
Okay, sure. If an existing development undergoes a change of use, only costs proportional to the amount of the improvement or facility that mitigates the need, therefore attributable to the reasonable related to the given development, shall be eligible for an in-lieu credit within 10 years, and then only against the specific relevant fees involved to which the facility or improvement relates.
So is that clear to you?
It is, actually.
Okay.
And what it relates to
is it clear to every other commissioner here?
It actually relates to your previous question.
Uh-huh.
What we're looking at is applying the fee in an even-handed way to a development when it's increasing in size. So you say you have an existing development, a use, and then now you're going to increase that size. Mm-hmm. Or, in this particular instance, We also thought about the idea that, let's say you have an existing development and that development goes dormant, goes unused for a certain amount of time. When do we allow that credit to continue, and then when do we draw a line and say, you know what, that storefront or that restaurant was dormant or not being used for 12 years, therefore it's almost as if it is, according to this paragraph now, starting over. They're going to pay based on their impacts, that kind of thing. So we thought about where we would draw this line of when, how long could they have this in lieu or credit towards their fee, and trying to be fair.
So is there any chance you could make that more than one sentence?
I'm sure we could edit it to make it a little bit clearer.
That would be great. I think that would be appreciated by the public.
Point noted. Okay.
Thank you. That's all I have. Anybody else? Do we have a speaker? We'll open the... Oh, I'm sorry. Commissioner Miller.
Now, the earlier question about reconstruction or fees applied to reconstruction, is that a change in the existing ordinance?
It's not.
It's not. The zoning ordinance currently provides for a five-year period as well.
Okay, so we're not adding an additional category then?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Just altering it slightly, I suppose. All right, so we'll open up the public hearing. We have one speaker slip from Laura Ranchetto.
Hi, good evening, Chair Fuller and commissioners. I kind of have questions, and it relates to that part that Mr. Ebling just read. So we had spoken at the workshops about the ADU projects, and I remember you had agreed or talked about not having any impact fees if it was a garage conversion. And so I have my planning department permit for garage conversion. It's 300 square feet. It's not adding any square footage or anything. And they're saying that the impact fee is almost $7,000. So this is where, I guess, in this resolution, this ordinance that will go before city council, this will be decided. But I don't see, so he was talking about what triggers a development. It was saying like a one resident. Oh, sorry, I wrote it down.
One traffic trip.
So, yeah, what will trigger the development impact fees? Will that garage conversion trigger the fees or not? Because it was saying, is it considered a new dwelling unit? I guess that's my question. Is it an accessory dwelling unit, or is it going to be, like by law, a dwelling unit? Because I think that would probably tweak it a little. And then about the waivers, is there a beneficial project waiver since it's done, if there were to be an impact fee to benefit the community? And also, I was thinking, because we're talking about the impact of one person in a 300 square foot unit. So like I mentioned before, my ex-husband left our property, and now he brings somebody else in. So there's no net, there's no impact of an extra person, because one person left, one person comes in. So there's three of us living in my house. Now there will be four, but there was four before. So I think we're talking, and it's not like I'm a developer bringing in a bunch of people into a big old complex. I'm not adding or taking away people. So kind of where is this clarified? I don't know if I'm allowed to ask questions in that resolution, or is it not clarified and this will go to council in some way? Because it's the accessory dwelling unit, and I didn't see that anywhere in the resolution.
Chair and commissioners, I'd be happy to address that question if you'd like. First off, the creation of an accessory dwelling unit does count as a dwelling unit, and a dwelling unit does trigger then new development impact fees. The question of beneficial projects is something that will go separately to the city council. The ordinance, I believe, contains language that authorizes the council to establish categories of development that count as beneficial projects, where for public policy reasons, the council may wish to reduce or waive fees. And accessory dwelling units are one category which will likely be up for consideration. Of course, it will be up to the council, but in fact, that that's one category that we will put forward to them. So that will go forward probably in conjunction with the DIF ordinance and the DIF study, likely in February. It's scheduled for now, and that is a debate then that members of the public can participate in and talk to council members about as they consider which categories they want to consider for waiver or reduction of DIF fees. And it sounds like, I mean, there are many considerations, but accessory dwelling units do provide for low-cost housing in the community, and there may be good reasons why the council might want to consider waivers or reductions of development impact fees for accessory dwelling units like the one that the public speaker is developing.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, thank you so much.
We hope you'll come and speak to the city council when the time comes.
Yeah. I'll bother them too.
Please.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else here to speak? I'll close the public hearing portion. And any more questions from the commissioners? All right.
Yes, so I have some deliberation.
Yes, deliberations. Let's have deliberations. Commissioner Maynard.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I'm very happy to see the roads, rails, and bike pedestrian separated out. I think that'll really ensure that we have that support for bike and pedestrian over time. I think it's a perfect time to be doing this with the bike master plan, so thank you for doing that. I also want to thank staff for a wonderful presentation and report to outlining all of this. I think it really helped us to make some decisions today. With those said, I still have some concerns about the stormwater component, and I'd like to engage with commissioners about that question. I agree with the idea of focusing on capacity building, but I think looking at drains as the only way to build capacity really denies some of other technology solutions and infrastructure solutions that we can be looking at. I think it ties our hands so tightly that it doesn't really allow us to use the funding in the way that might make sense moving forward. I'd rather see that be a stormwater fee or a stormwater capacity building fee, but something that allows a little bit more than just focusing on the drain solution. Because I think that with smart use of infrastructures such as bioswales, we can increase capacity for stormwater in a way that does have some co-benefits, but is still focused on the capacity piece. And so I'd love to hear from other commissioners on that issue.
I'll jump in. I think if you think of drainage as any way that water that lands on the surface ends up getting absorbed, or because that's actually draining into the ground, right? So if it's draining into the ground or it's draining into a system that takes it out to the ocean, that's all drainage. And I believe that's what we're talking about here. And that's where the city's sort of opportunity to and responsibility to facilitate this is in that respect. Mm-hmm. Because we're not in the flood control mm-hmm. business. And the storm water aspect is the quality of the water, correct? And that's a whole separate set of regulations mm-hmm. and departments that control that. Mm-hmm. So, if we wanted to, I'm not sure if we even could have a development impact fee because they're only for capacity improvement projects by law, is that correct?
Correct.
So if it's only for capacity improvement, improving the mm-hmm. capacity, then the quality would have to, it would require potentially a change at the state legislature mm-hmm. level to have the state mm-hmm. legislature allow us to collect a fee for water quality. Am I on the right track there?
Yes.
Okay.
Although, to be clear, though, I'm not arguing for a water quality fee. I'm still saying focusing on capacity building, but I think there's other ways to do capacity building. Now, if it's stormwater drainage and capacity building, I would be fine with that. I guess my question is what infrastructure could be covered by this? And I do believe that something like a bioswale increases capacity substantially and quite honestly better than the drain would. And so is that something that could potentially be included in this? I don't see it as just a water quality issue.
I think you said it could. you know.
Well, I could it. I because actually I heard that it couldn't. So
I heard so that it could, but it would have to be divided between water quality, and which would get funding either from the city or from another source that provides funding for water quality, and then from the impact fees for the bioswale. So it would be a division of the cost.
So
that's the way I saw it.
Can I ask for that clarification? Because if that's the case, then I take my concern back. Could a bioswale, could the infrastructure of a bioswale be funded with this fee given the current language here?
Commissioner Maynard, yes, okay. It can be, as long as it's capacity increasing.
Okay.
And I think maybe, and Chair, I really appreciate the way you explained it, because maybe I didn't explain it very well before. I know I got off into a bit of a technical tangent, but I think what I was really trying to get at is there's some industry standards with the language we're using. I think the industry standard is to mention the words stormwater really pertains to the dealing with the state regulations and the NPDES program. The storm drain system is, as the chair said, is an elaborate system that could include bioswales, it could include infiltration, but it also includes our drainage inlets, our storm drain piping systems, our outlets, our channels. It's the entire system. So when we talk about storm drains, to us and the industry, to me that means this bigger term. It's not just a drainage inlet. So I think the answer is yes, and I think we phrased it this way just to stick within industry standards.
It sounds like it includes the bioswales, which was my concern, so I take my concern back.
So just to further clarify, I believe, you know, when we're engineering the street improvements for the Old Town Goleta area, there were some, you know, some, what do you call them, the holes, the gravel where the water goes into, right? So, and those would be included in capacity of storm drainage, is that correct?
Absolutely, as long as it's capacity increases.
Yeah, good, okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you.
So our can I ask a question? Our bio, I guess I'm behind the curve here on bioswales. Are bioswales created for the primary purpose of dealing with storm water drainage? In other words, is that the primary purpose, and filtration is a nice benefit from having them?
I can say that we, out at UCSB, we've used them very effectively for building capacity of our stormwater system. It's hard to determine primary purpose because where primary, one person's, the thing that they're excited about a project might be different than what somebody else is excited about a project, but it doesn't change how much capacity it builds. Okay. What I would say is that the bioswales we've used on campus have been incredibly effective at building capacity of our stormwater system.
Okay. She answered my question.
Yeah, no, I was just going to add, you know, maybe one reason why I'm focused on the industry standard language of it is that idea that when you talk about capacity, you're talking about the storm drain system. When you're talking about a bioswale, the function of a bioswale, not only having both capacity, but that function of filtration, you know, I think it is important to actually maintain the vocabulary and the industry standards so that we're not confusing what we're doing, what we're paying for, and where the funding sources are coming from. I would not want an auditor to be confused by that. So I think that is an important aspect of maintaining those words, that vocabulary. Even though I understand clearly what you're saying, that a bioswale in and of itself can be part and parcel of a storm drain system that does add capacity, I just want to be really careful about that so that we move forward with making sure we're always clear on what we're spending money on.
Thank you. Any other deliberations from commissioners? Anyone care to make a motion?
I will move that the commission adopt resolution 18-522 entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, recommending the City Council approval of a new development impact fee ordinance.
Is there a second?
I will second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Passes 4-0. Thank you. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Madam Clerk, would you read the next agenda item, please?
Item C1 is a discussion action item. It's the updated general plan conformance findings for the capital improvement program, fiscal year 2018 to 2019.
And who do we have for our presentation?
I can introduce him. Sorry. We're getting our act together.
Welcome back.
Thank you. In the Public Works Department, we have James Winslow. He's our senior project manager and one of our civil engineers, really handling our capital improvement program. And so I'd like to have him do the presentation this evening on this item.
Thank you, Director Ebling. Commissioner members, members of the community, again, James Winslow in Capital Improvement Program. It's good to see you guys again. We're here to talk about the conformance with the general plan, affectionately known as the 65401. And so, as you know, state law requires the Planning Commission to authorize or adopt the Capital Improvement Program list and demonstrate that it's in conformity with the general plan. That is per the government code section 65401, which is why we entitle it that. If you recall, May 18th, 21st, 2018, you adopted resolution 1805 that essentially did that to effect for the fiscal year 2018-2019. So you may be asking yourself, why are we here tonight?
Thank you.
So the purpose of tonight is requesting that you rescind resolution 1805 and adopt resolution 18 next in order for fiscal year 2018. A couple of reasons for that. Public Works is a new director, Director Ebling, and under that new leadership, we are doing a comprehensive and thorough overhaul of our capital improvement program, developing a list that encompasses everything. We're also doing an annual work plan. And through that, we've identified what our annual items that go to council or planning commission are, and that is the graph you see in front of you today. As you can see, right now, the general plan conformity sometime comes in the summer. That allows the capital improvement program, Public Works, to then go through the DIF update, go through the annual work plan that is new, going through the Measure A program of projects where we fund the list of projects or assign funding to them that then we take to council to authorize. And then also allows us to bring the projects that you determine are in conformity with the general plan into the budget cycle. And then through that, council authorizes the budget and prioritizes the workload. So that's the annual step. That's kind of how it should function together. We're here today outside of that, again, and bringing it back to you for four main reasons. First off, as you know, we just completed the Bike Ped Master Plan, a two-year project that many in the audience here helped and assisted with that. Part of that was a list of 37 projects that we want to make sure are in conformity with the general plan. That is the next steps. And then we can take those off the list. We can begin the conceptual phase of the project delivery process as needed. We can then go to construction funding dollars or grant funding and go from there. The second item is the new development impact fee, the ordinance that you just passed today. So there's a few new projects on there that we've identified and are in the list and the revised table under Exhibit 1. And then the third item is the comprehensive list, right? We've really gone through and did an overhaul. We're bringing everything into one master document. And so between the Bike Ped Master Plan, the DIF ordinance, and three stormwater projects that we've identified, those are new to the revised table. And so that's the reason for bringing the revised table back for you today. We've also applied for Measure A grant funding for 7 or 8 projects. 3 or 4 of them are new. They're a holistic approach, whether it's a citywide traffic signal evaluation or school zone striping evaluations. And so bringing them to Planning Commission as the list to revise and determine they're in conformance with the general plan allows us to take those forward in the next steps for the grant application process. With that, We had a couple. You're not opening. Okay. There we go. So we have a list of the projects. This is the city map. And you can see one of the projects that we have in construction right now is the newly named Johnny D. Wallace Neighborhood Park. I'm just going to run through a few of our projects that are either in construction or new to our list for the commissioners. So first off is Johnny D. Wallace Park. It's in construction. Ribbon cutting will be in March. For that project, it's going along well. We were just out there today. It looks great, and it's going to be a real benefit to the community. Second project, just started construction, is sidewalk closed ahead. We have the crosswalk at South Kellogg, which is adjacent to the park. That's going to be a rapid flashing beacon and a crosswalk at that location. Cathedral Oaks road paving, that is going to be beginning construction. Here's the outlines of the work, scope of work. It's basically from Fairview West to Carlo Drive, and that'll be full depth reclamation or digging up the entire roadway and putting it back and repaving the entire area, some grinding and overlay in that area. It's a much needed project, and that is beginning construction after the first of the year, after the new year, and a 71 or 72 day construction project. So that'll be done this spring, before summer.
Excuse me. What's the number for that project?
The number, that doesn't have a capital project number. It's in our streets maintenance program, 5800. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of a mesh of projects. It's really not truly a capital project. It's being managed by our engineering division and streets division group. So.
Okay, thanks.
San Jose Creek multi-purpose path. This is the gap and barrier removal project that is infilling between the North County San Jose Creek and the South County at Goleta Beach that we just submitted in Teresa, my colleague, and I, Lopes, Teresa Lopes, an $18 million active transportation grant for, and we are moving forward with that project with environmental to keep the process going so that we're ready to construct with Caltrans when they do their State Route 217 and US 101 bridge replacements so that they are tied together. Ward Drive, this is one of the Measure A grant projects. It's a sidewalk infill. It's filling in gap in the section of sidewalk along Ward Drive south of Hollister Avenue, about 230 linear feet that is currently missing that'll be infilled. Again, that's a Measure A project grant application that we are submitting for. Here's another one of the Measure A grants that we're looking at submitting for. It's school zone signage and striping. This is a picture of the Kellogg School area. And you can just kind of see the school here. And then there's a bunch of just roads around it. And here's some of the intersections. So it's going to be a holistic approach of evaluating the school zone striping and signage across the city. That will allow us to prioritize the work going forward, what needs to be done, and what the priority would need to be for those projects, and then also secure funding for the work. Covington Bridge, this is one of the bike ped master plan projects. If you notice on the list, there's only 37 in the table of bike ped projects. That's because we moved one up into the CIP list as a TBD number. We are asking for Measure A money for this project. It's a major North Coast route project, and it would be widening that pedestrian bridge to accommodate bicyclists and pedestrians so that you do not have to get off and walk your bike. Most cyclists don't. But there is a sign requesting that cyclists do walk through there. So that'd be a great benefit to the community. It's also a safe route to schools for the junior high and high school students who are commuting to. They use that bridge frequently. Traffic signal evaluation. Again, we have a CIP project to replace four signals that we know are really old in the city. Most of them are on Hollister Avenue. For instance, Hollister and Rutherford is one of them. However, we need to do an evaluation of all of the assets of the city and then use that for our 38 intersections that are signalized in terms of prioritization of workload and funding and what needs to be done going forward. So this is, again, a holistic approach that we're taking in Public Works to evaluate our entire program and traffic signals being a significant portion of that program. Another Measure A grant that we're applying for. Here's another one that's kind of came out of the bike ped master plan process. It's the crosswalk at the Kyrielle and Fairview Center. This is, you have Fairview Avenue is right here. You can see behind the picture, Kyrielle. And then this is where Cajun Kitchen is, Fairview Center. And this is the ramp coming down from Fairview Avenue. So there's a crosswalk there with a pedestrian hybrid beacon that is being recommended at that location.
If I may, so that's the solution that was finally determined the community would be most willing to accept and would also be the most feasible engineering-wise.
Correct, Commissioner Ford.
That was a pretty popular topic for a while there.
Commissioner Ford, you're absolutely right. It's as opposed to taking out the ramp coming down from Fairview, the recommendation is that we'll move forward with the design, then bringing the council to authorize construction or advertising and construction would be to put in the crosswalk with a pedestrian hybrid beacon to stop traffic to allow pedestrians to safely cross.
Great, thank you.
Including school-aged children commuting to school. Here's another Measure A grant. It's over on Stork Road, kind of south of Hollister. We're working a co-application with MTD to replace or upgrade bus stops, co-locate the bus stop on the Stork Road South near Home Depot. There's two bus stops currently, make them into one, and then upgrade the bus stop on Hollister Avenue just east of Stork Road intersection, as well as a bike lane and pedestrian improvements and some median improvements. So that's a significant project that we're hoping gets funded through the Measure A grant program. Hollister Class 1 bike path lighting. We are asking for, again, Measure A money to add lighting in. If you recall, my colleague Teresa Lopes completed this project recently. They did get add a conduit in and the appurtenances so we can move forward with lighting. Didn't have the funding at the time, but we made it as easy as possible to be able to add lighting in the future. And so we're asking for Measure A money to go forward and actually add the lighting in to that path project. Again, another great benefit to the community out there in Western Goleta. Stork Road, this is one of the three additional DIF, development impact fees. This is a widening of the Stork Road interchange to add a second right turn lane. So there's dedicated two right turn lanes. You can see that we're widening the right turn, adding a lane here on the ramp. So there's two lanes. And then this makes the two lanes going through, converts them into through lanes. Currently right now we have a right, a through right, and a through. And so this would be a right, and a through. So a significant capacity improvement in this area that I think will be needed. A second project that came as a result of the development impact ordinance review and Nexus study is on Los Caneros. You can see, again, widening the lane, adding a right turn lane on Los Caneros on the Hollister, and adding some green striping to facilitate and ensure that this is the conflict zone for cars and bikes and show where bikes need to be and really improve some of the safety and capacity through there. Los Caneros at Calle Coral, the intersection actually right out here. We're looking at some intersection improvements, some right turn lanes, and some widening through there to facilitate vehicles, as well as, again, the conflict green striping going forward, and then the Calle Coral connection. We have a few drainage structure improvements. Here's one that our, Mr. Everett King up in our stormwater and solid waste group identified is at the end of Elwood Beach. You can see the conduit, the drainage pipe is raised, elevated, and so that's an area where we need to improve drainage. So that's one of the projects that he's looking for funding for. And so we're adding that to the 65401, as well as the Phelps Ditch out there at El Encanto Phelps Ditch area. Not just a drainage, but this is a trash capture. So we have a trash problem where we need to capture some of our trash in the city that's on city streets. And we have two projects in the CIP list. This is one of them that will install trash structures to try to capture that trash before it makes its way outside the city limits and into our ocean. So.
Commissioner Maynard.
Just a quick question. So how does that sort of thing get funded? Because I know we were just talking about that wouldn't be something that would usually be covered by DIF fees. So how would you fund this type of project?
Commissioner Maynard, the most likely funding for this is we actually have a solid waste fund that this is eligible for because it's dealing with trash, and we do have a fund balance that we'd like to expend. Other than that, we honestly would also use general fund, for example. So we'd want to be really careful about how we look at that and use that solid waste fund, though. I think it's nice that we have it.
Thank you.
So that was just a highlight of some of the additional projects we've added in, some of the projects that are in construction right now using a Google Earth flyover view. Hopefully you like that a little bit better than just the standard slides. But again, we're before you to ask that you rescind 1805 resolution and adopt Resolution 18 next in order for fiscal year 2018-2019 with the additional projects that we've added in. And with that, we'll take any questions.
Questions from the commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Lynn.
During our May deliberations, we had the Audubon people here and worrying about the bathroom at Rancho La Patera. I see a general Rancho La Patera improvements. Does that still include a bathroom, or what's happening with that? I just thought we should follow up on it.
Well, again, the purpose of this evening's item is just to make sure that all these projects are in conformance with the general plan, with the 65-401 hearing. More particularly for that project, we're still going through the project delivery process. I've reassigned some staff to look at some other higher priority projects first, but still definitely on my list of things we're going to be accomplishing. So with that project delivery process, I think we've greatly reduced the scope of the project. It will likely include some type of bathroom, but we're still looking at the location, so that it would have very little impact. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the primary purpose of that project to begin with was the bringing the fire service line through the property, and we don't want to lose track of why the project was initiated in the first place, which was for fire service. But then we hopefully can add an amenity such as the bathroom, but again, ultimately we want to make sure that any capital project, when we're actually in the process of delivering it, that we work with conceptual design, then we go through environmental review, final design, and then construction. With that process, that as your new director, this is a process that I'm really harping on and making sure that my staff understands that we go through this, and that there's public outreach, there's public involvement, there's the involvement of the various boards and commissions, and obviously ultimately the city council, before we ever move forward with constructing something like that.
Thank you.
Sure.
Commissioner Miller? No? Okay, so I have just a couple comments. I guess, first off, I didn't see anything about a parking lot on Orange Avenue that we own behind where Alex's used to be. Is anything going to be done with that?
Chair Fuller, the parking lot is in the list. I think it's 9,100.
Okay.
It's up in the high 9,000 numbers. Oh. Right? It is on the list.
So I missed it. Okay. That's good. Good. Just a comment about while you're doing the study for traffic lights, I would suggest that if it's possible to also consider whether roundabouts might be a good alternative to traffic lights in, you know, locations. I personally think they greatly facilitate the flow of traffic, in some ways reduce conflicts. And I don't know whether they're more expensive or less expensive, but I certainly appreciate not waiting at a traffic light, even if I'm only going 15 miles an hour through a roundabout. So I guess that's my only comments. We'll open it for a public hearing. Is there anybody here to speak on this? Madam Clerk, do we have any speaker slips? Okay. So any other questions from the commissioners? Any response from staff? Commissioner Maynard.
Just one response for you. The Orange Avenue parking lot is 1996.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad it's there. Hopefully sooner than later, but personal. So we'll close the public hearing. And any deliberation from the commissioners? Anybody care to make a motion? Yes, Commissioner Miller.
I'll move to adopt resolution number 18-360 entitled a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, rescinding Resolution 18-05 and finding the fiscal year 2018-2019 capital improvement program is in conformance with the Goleta General Plan / Coastal Land Use Plan pursuant to Section 65401 of the Government Code, Exhibit 1.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Commissioner Lynn, thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Yep. And opposed? Passes 4-0. Thank you. Madam Clerk, the next agenda item?
Yes. Item C2 is the Planning Commission meeting schedule for 2019.
Director Imhoff?
Thank you, Chair. Our current planning manager, Lisa Prossy, will lead us into this item.
Good evening, planning commissioners. It's been a while.
Good to see you.
Yeah, thank you. And it's been a while, and I'm not even... not that one. There. So we're here to talk about our meeting dates for 2019. This chart is also in your Planning Commission staff report. As we identified in the staff report, there are three holiday conflicts with three dates that conflict with your regular meeting schedule. As you know, you meet on the second and fourth Mondays, typically, of each month. And looking at our holiday schedule for the city in 2019, there are three dates that conflict, those being Memorial Day on May 27th, Veterans Day on November 11th, and then December 23rd, the cities will be closed for the week to celebrate the holidays. So those three dates are unavailable to have meetings. And then in addition, we identified there were three additional dates that the commission may want to consider whether or not you wish to meet on. The first one is on March 25th. That is the week of spring break that is observed by the local school districts and by UCSB. You have in the past not held meetings out of respect for people who may not be around, who may want to participate in the commission's business. Another date is October 14th, which is Columbus Day. That is not a holiday for the city and is not a holiday that has been observed by the local school districts or by UCSB. And we just wanted to bring that one to your attention. The Planning Commission has not you have chosen to meet on that date. You have not chosen to not meet. No, that's a double negative. And then the third date is November 25th. This time, this is the Monday of Thanksgiving week. The last couple of years, it's been the Monday after Thanksgiving. But this time, it is the Monday of Thanksgiving week. So I give you that outline. And we welcome your input on how you want to handle those dates. For sure, we ask you to acknowledge or recognize that you will not be meeting on the dates that we are closed, and that the city observes as holidays. But the other dates, it's for your discussion. And I'll leave that with you. That concludes my presentation.
I'll start with Commissioner Maynard.
So this past year, for most of the days that we decided to cancel, we added an additional date on the calendar, so we'd still have two in the month.
Mm-hmm.
As a planning commissioner, that worked well for me because that helped me set aside time. How did that work for staff? Were having two meetings close together, did that become stressful?
A lot of the times we ended up not needing that second meeting, just because we weren't sure how the dates would fall, but I do know it does make it a little stressful, particularly on our administrative staff as we try to put together packets. But we are, that's our job, and we're willing, to do that if you feel that's important.
Do you know the ones we moved, how often we ended up using those?
Or a rough guess? Mr. Imhoff, my guess is maybe once. I'm thinking there was one in May that we might have used. I don't think I think we only needed one meeting in March. I do know we had needed two in May, and I believe we did that. But that's my recollection. Sorry.
It's certainly not bad to have that flexibility.
Anybody else comment? No? I'll just say, it's considering how infrequently we've actually been meeting, it doesn't seem like a great loss if we just X off everything that has a asterisk or two asterisk. And, we can always schedule additional meetings if need be. We have, right? You know, whenever the necessity reared its head. So if we just make a plan to not meet on those, close to holiday days or holiday days, and then, if we find we need more days, an extra meeting because of some reason, then we'll fill it in. Does that sound amenable to everyone?
Could I?
I was just going to say, I think that approach makes sense.
Yeah, and Commissioner Maynard?
Maybe one slight amendment or question for staff first. So for most months, there's only one that we would cancel in that case in November that would result in not having November
right.
meetings at all.
Right.
Do we want to schedule one meeting in November just so there's something within that month?
Yeah, and I think that is...
For me, it's easier to plan ahead than getting additional things last minute.
18th?
Yeah.
18th?
Let me see if it doesn't conflict with... Yeah. I don't believe there's a meeting on the third Monday. Okay. So, yeah, that could work.
18th?
Yeah. And I believe you did do that sure. this past year because yep. we have the same problem.
Mm-hmm. Even if it gets canceled. Okay. So does everybody we'll cross out all the ones with asterisks but add a November 18th meeting?
Would you like me to run through then the dates that you would be meeting potentially? Or is that
I think they're here.
Pardon?
I think they're on the paper.
Okay, great.
So we don't need a vote on that.
No,
we think got a consensus.
Yeah, we
right.
have a consensus.
Okay. Great. Moving on. Director's report.
Thank you, Chair. As you've noted, we have not been meeting very frequently now and have not had a terribly full schedule. It looks like that's going to continue into January. Likely the January 14th date will be canceled for lack of items. In the meantime, there will be a holiday closure of the city offices. City offices will be closed from December 24th through January 1st and then reopening on Wednesday, January 2nd. Also, I wanted to alert the commission that the city is now hosting an application process for the three planning commission seats that are whose terms are expiring. And we would encourage anyone interested to apply or reapply, as the case may be. Applications are due. The deadline is January 2nd at 5 p.m. Questions concerning applications can be directed to our city clerk, Deborah Lopez, at the following email, cityclerkgroup@cityofgoleta.org. You may find the applications on the boards and commissions webpage on the city website. So that, I think, concludes my update and report.
Okay. Thank you. Comments from the planning commissioners? Have a wonderful holiday.
I'll second that.
Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Adjourned.